Welcome back, guys. Today, I have my friend Kyle Wilson. Not only was he an active duty Apache pilot, he's now flying in the reserves, flying Blackhawks, along with being a certified flight instructor, and now currently being a pilot in the airlines. Bro, it's super appreciative for you to come on here, and it's an honor. So tell me a little bit of your backstory on what got you into flying.
Yeah, hey, I appreciate you having me on. Honestly, when I was younger, I never had, you know, any idea that I wanted to be a pilot. I actually was an engineer. It was super boring, dude. Sitting inside of an office, staring at a computer screen for your entire shift. Dude, it's terrible. So I ended up enlisting in the Air Force back in 2009, October. And I got to the Air Force as an engineer because that was what my background was. Next thing I know, I'm surrounded by all these aircraft. I'm like, dude, that's what I want to do. So I spent 4 years kind of finishing that engineering deal. And so I ended up selling my motorcycle. I had a Ducati. This is Hawaii 2009. I had an 898 Ducati or something. It was worth like $10,000. And well, I should back up a little bit. So the first time I went to the flight line to do like a, every time you go, the first time you go, you do kind of like an intro flight type thing. Well, I do the intro flight, and he's like, okay, that'll be $280. I'm like, bro, I'm not going to pay $280 every time I get done doing this. So I did it. I paid him his $280, and I was like, I'm going to have to sell my motorcycle. So I sold my Ducati for $10,000, and I brought all $10,000 back to the flight line, Barbers Point Flight School in Hawaii, if you're familiar. Handed him all the money, said, hey, when I come in here, take my money. You know, that's what we're going to use to pay for it. So did that for probably like 6 or 8 months while I was in college. Back, I went back to school to become an Apache pilot. That's another story. But so I ended up flying, doing like probably 20, 25 hours. You and I've went up. What I found out was I liked it. I wanted to do it. I also found out it wasn't easy. So I did that for like 20, 25 hours, finished, school where I was at the University of Hawaii. And while I was there, I knew that I wanted to, commission as an Army aviator. So kind of to connect those two stories, what I was enlisted Air Force, and as an engineer, and I left there after 4 years and I went to the University of Hawaii, and I knew I could only commission as an aviator either through ROTC Air Force or ROTC Army. And when I went down there, the Air Force didn't need people. This is 2013. They didn't need people. The Army was cool with it. And the guy, he called me on like a Friday night, which is probably a big red flag for the Army. But he called me on a Friday night and he's like, hey, you can be a helicopter pilot in the Army. So I used that as kind of motivation to go commission as an Army aviator. And I did that story I just told you at the same time, but.
Dude, I'm just thinking, like, going to college, wanting to be an engineer, which is not easy within itself, but then going back to college to become a pilot. So at this point, after you graduate, walk me through the steps to become, as you commissioned, as a pilot in the Army. To pick what you're wanting to fly, did you get to, or was it just naturally selected for you?
Yeah, so that's a long story as well, and we could probably do a few sessions about that whole thing. But if you're familiar with how the commissioning works in the military, right? You're an Army officer mm-hmm. as well. But for your viewers and stuff, if you're familiar with how that works, basically you can commission one of two ways. You can go through a military academy, right? So Air Force has the Air Force Academy, Army has West Point, you know, and so on, and then outside of the academies, there's ROTC, and it's the same, almost equivalent amount of people, I think, at least as far as allotments for aviation. Aviation's always at the very top. So you got to be, when I went through in 2014, you had to be top 10%. It's like 12%, but roughly if you were top 10%, you'd get aviation. And they weigh, what they weigh really highly is your GPA, obviously is like 35%, and your PT scores and things like that. And so I knew I had to do well in those things. So instead of me trying to challenge myself in some other new degree, you know, engineering or some challenging degree like I had been doing, I chose economics. And I was like, I'll just do an economics degree. Get straight A's, boom, get aviation. So that's what I did. And so that story I told you at the beginning where I went and took those flight lessons where I was first introduced to aviation, that kind of just introduced me to a Cessna, right? That's kind of what everybody starts on. And it introduced me to aviation just in general. And then I commissioned and I got aviation, right? So I ended up in that top like 12% and I got aviation. I selected aviation. But people who select aviation in the military, you're still like, there's zero requirement to have any aviation in your background. Now, with the exception of possibly like, you know, at the Air Force Academy, some of those kids will get, they'll get like an aviation class during the summer or something. You know, they're just so much more exposed to aviation because it's just aviation centric. But generally, if you get, when you commission and let's say branch aviation, everybody shows up to Fort Rucker, they call it now Fort Novosel in Alabama, where Army Flight School is. Everybody shows up there with zero aviation experience. So only thing I had was that 20, 25 hours I told you about when I sold my motorcycle in a Cessna. Didn't even matter. I show up to fly helicopters now at Fort Rucker in 2016.
So now, what you're telling me, what kickstarted your career in being able to successfully become a pilot is you sold that motorcycle to pay to go and get those certifications. But at this point, now you completed Fort Rucker and you're in Alabama. And now do you go back to Hawaii and fly, or what did you go after Fort Rucker?
Yeah. So you do 2 years to finish your flight school stuff with the Army to be a helicopter pilot. There's some schools and things in there like SEER survival school and some other things you got to do, but the flying, all said and done, you leave after about 2 years. So then you go, we went back to Hawaii because we got stationed there because my wife's Air Force as well. So we could only go to so many places. So it was like Alaska, Hawaii, Colorado, you know, a handful where there's Air Force bases. So we go back and now I'm a commercial helicopter guy because that's kind of inherent to when you leave Army Flight School. The FAA gives you an equivalent. They know, hey, we'll give you a commercial rotary thing. So that means you can fly helicopters commercially for money. And when you can't do it with fixed wing. So like you can't do it with an airplane. You can't be an airline pilot. So what you got to do is you got to go get all your fixed wing ratings. But I'm commercial rated on a on a helicopter. So I'm commercial rated pilot. My certificate's commercial rated, but it's not fixed wing. So. You got to go knock out some fixed wing hours. So what I did was because we're military, we get GI Bill. I used my GI Bill on the weekends at George's Aviation in Honolulu, Hawaii. I'd go down there and I would just fly 5:30 in the morning. And I went, did my instrument add on and I did my commercial fixed wing add on. And that's all I did in Hawaii. And then I leave there. After 4 or 5 years and go back to Triple C in Alabama. I did my instructor license and my multi-engine add-on and stuff. So there's a whole discussion about certificates and things, but I could help, I get asked all the time, like, what's the quickest and what's the best way? Hey, my son wants to become a pilot. Mm-hmm. He wants to become what kind of pilot? Airline pilot? Right. He wants to be an airline pilot, of course. Everyone wants to be an airline pilot. Okay, well, there's a lot of ways to get there. There's two big givens. One, it's going to cost you a lot of money. It costs a ton of money to fly an aircraft. And the cheapest aircraft you're going to fly around is a Cessna, right? A Cessna is like, depends where you're at, but generally, let's say $175 an hour, plus an instructor is like $50. It's $225 an hour that you're going to pay, and you're just for your private license, it's going to be 40 hours. So do the math. That's 12 grand just for your private license. Mm-hmm. Your instrument add-on, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of going pretty far down it, but your instrument add-on is the same amount. It's another 15,000 probably. And your commercial is 120 hours. It's going to be 40,000. Most guys that go do it at a school, they leave there with like 100, 150,000 in debt. So,
man, that's wild. And, you know, we were in Hawaii for 2 years. So I'm just thinking of all the locations to fly. And you get stuck flying in Hawaii. Is that something that's ideal for everybody? Talk me through one of the most memorable flights that you have flying in Hawaii. I'm sure it's amazing with the sunsets or sunrise or the different islands. Was it Oahu that you love flying to or the Big Island, so on and so forth?
Yeah, so I've got a lot of fix this thing. I've got a lot of flying time in Hawaii, both on the helicopter side and fixed wing. I'll just answer your question super simply as far as what's the coolest place. I loved flying to Molokai. So Molokai is the first island to the east of Oahu, and it's only about, I think if you go from the, there's only a gap between land of about 15 miles. So I'd climb, and if I was in a fixed wing, you know, you're in a single engine plane. If you lose that one engine, you're going to go in the ocean. So you glide. So I always like to be climbed up to about 7,000 in between the islands. So that way I could glide close to shore if I lost my engine in the worst spot, right? Right in the middle. But Molokai, on the north side of Molokai, there is an old airstrip at a, if you know anything about the history of Hawaii, the island of Molokai is famous for Father Damien was his name. He was a priest when leprosy became really bad in the, I think, late 19th century, so late 1800s, turn of the century. Leprosy was bad on the islands of Hawaii, and they sent everybody to Molokai, to this little spot on the north side called, can't think of it, but there's a little airstrip there, and there's a museum and stuff there now. And so that's where they sent them, and I would fly over there. It's super pretty. The cliffs on the north side are the largest sea cliffs in the world. They go up to like 3,000 feet. And I would just grab the plane and be like, hey, let's go over there. In the helicopter, though, you can do a lot more stuff. You can go inside these valleys. So taking the helicopter inside of Kualoa Valley, where the Kualoa Ranch is on the east side, taking the helicopter inside of Waimea Valley on Kauai, and getting right up against waterfalls, it's insane. I love it.
So when we first met and you started telling me that you were a pilot and all this, so from the outside looking in, one, you were flying Apaches, active duty in the Army, now in the reserves flying back Blackhawks, but also being current as an airline pilot. What's been the funnest experience that you have as of now that you've had to really learn throughout that process of being able to fly? Was it the Black Hawk, just trying to adapt to it after flying Apaches for so long? Or was it harder to now try to transition into the airlines? In your opinion, what has been the best experience out of all three of those?
So everything gets, everything is relative, right? So I'm not going to but everything is absolutely relative to where you're at in life and where you're at in your skill and what you know how to do as an aviator. So the most challenging was going to Army flight school. I didn't have any experience flying a helicopter. First time I fly a helicopter was the first time I got, get in there. And then you go to learn to fly the Apache, which is, if anybody listens, I'm familiar, it's an attack helicopter, and you fly with a monocle in your eye. It's called an HDU, helmet display unit. And that's what you fly with. There's a FLIR, there's a forward-looking infrared, basically a camera on the front of the helicopter that sees infrared light, which is just heat, right? So it doesn't require any ambient light, as opposed to goggles. In the Black Hawk, you fly with NVGs. That requires some ambient light. So if it were cloudy, so whether it's stars or moonlight and stuff, that is what you're amplifying. And a FLIR on the front of Apache, it's just based upon heat signature. And so that's what we learned to fly with. But in just one little eye, in one eye, in shades of green. And you don't have any experience doing that. And I got so sick. So they do a first, you do like a month of just kind of intro to it. And then after that, they do what's called the bag. And it's in the Apache, they close the whole canopy off so you can't see outside of it. And you sit in the back, and the instructor sits in the front, because you're covering everything. He needs to be able to see outside. It looks like it's dark to you because you're only looking through that monocle. And so that's how they teach you to fly with that. So now the whole thing's closed off and all you can see is this, and you have no experience with it. And you just get sick, right? You just sweat. I remember sweating, being so tense, getting just, if you've been motion sick before, yeah. It's like the worst motion sickness you've ever had in your life. So that was by far the most challenging. The most gratifying things are, fast forward down the road, 5 years, and I've got, 700 hours in the Apache. I'm an Apache troop commander, and I'm a pilot in command, air mission commander, and I know exactly how to fly that aircraft very, very well and can do it in any mission set. those are the moments where you're like, you know, it's all worth it, right? And it feels really good. And it's really kind of, that's where it's dangerous because you're complacent and you're just like, you know, you go to JRTC and you're flying low level. I've hit my tires against the trees plenty of times, right? That's how you survive in a, you know, in a, as you, a Lisco fight, right? You're going to have to drag your wheels in the trees in order to survive. So I've done that a bunch, and that's the most gratifying portion. And that's two stories about the Apache. I know you probably wanted me to talk about the airlines. And then you finish all that stuff, and all of a sudden now you're training for the airlines, and you show up, and they think you're this badass war, you know, war guy. And all of a sudden I'm learning to fly jets, and that's tough as well.
Yeah.
But their training programs on the civilian side are so top notch that it's a little different. And I can go into that if you want, but, you get to the airlines and you kind of feel like, man, I've made it, you know. I get to sleep in hotels. I'm not sleeping on cots anymore and things like that. But also flying a jet, you know, where one day I might, I mean, I could make up, I could go from Seattle to Chicago to Canada in one day. You know, that's super cool. Air Force jet guys get to experience that, but us helicopter guys, we don't get to.
And that's pretty cool what you mentioned. And I did have a follow-on question with that. With your years of service, it's normally kind of like your story is rare to a lot of people because of your years of service. You've actually went from active duty and now transitioned later on in life to be the airline pilot. Do you think people in the military that's still active duty, do they follow under that umbrella of like, hey, I've already spent this many years in service, I'm just going to stay in the service? What made you at your point in your career want to transition out of the military and become an airline pilot?
Yeah, so this could probably be another podcast in itself too, right? About getting out after a lot of time in life committed to the military. I've always thought of myself as not being like super, like I've always thought, hey man, I could just get out. Like I will have no problem with it. And what I've realized in these past couple months, because I got out in July, I changed command in March, is that like the military was my identity. It is my identity. Mm-hmm. And it's super difficult to, if I didn't have this airline thing, it would be very difficult to find purpose every day. Because and this could be a whole nother podcast thing, right? So you the military gives you this huge sense of purpose every single day. And we hate it a lot of times, I know. But like, man, you go through these super high highs, and then you get to go on leave, and you get to, you know, you go to JRTC or NTC, and you achieve those things, and then all of a sudden, boom, you get to go back to your house and you feel good about it, and you feel good about having everything you accomplished. And it's just very high highs and very, you know, and you've a really good sense of purpose. And then you get out and you're just another guy, right? And so the airlines, if I have any advice, so your question was about, you know, doing it later in life. I'm 38. So it is, a lot of the guys in my class were a little bit younger than me, but most guys will retire around 42, 43, I'd say, mm-hmm. you know, on average, maybe 45. And it's going to be hard for them because their whole identity is 25 years has been the military. And I just think you have to have something lined up to immediately start doing something. But whatever it is that you do, you're never too old, that's for sure, you know, unless you're, you know, in your like mid-60s, which that's, airline pilot can only be 65 anyways. But whatever it is that you're doing, you're never too old. And just you're going to be outside your comfort zone because that's where we grow, right? But it's just normal. It's a normal feeling, and you're going to have a lot of weird feelings when you get out, you know. Especially, a lot of people like to thank you when you're in the military all the time. People thank you for your service, or as a captain, like us, commander, people kiss your ass, right? Mm-hmm. All the time. People tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah.
Man, you get your ego boosted a lot. And then all of a sudden you get out, you don't put the uniform on, you're not captain anymore, you're Kyle and you're Ryan, and you got to find, you know, you got to realize, hey, you got to be a little more humbled about things and realize like, you know, you're going to have to earn your respect in the real world, right? So, I don't know.
Yeah, I relate to that so much, man. I even find myself today, you know, thinking like when I really think about my career and everything that I've done, it's the military is all I know. So to answer that, you know, going off of that, is I find myself in that situation like, man, I could transition and I would do fine, but then it's the unknown that I think we worry about and we're scared the most for, is because even knowing my career, my background, I can transition and do something, yeah, but literally thinking every day I wake up, I put on the uniform, I wear the uniform more than I do civilian clothes, you know. So I guess my next question is, what piece of advice for anyone that's listening that is wanting to pursue, whether it be a certified flight instructor, an Apache pilot, a Black Hawk pilot, or even trying to transition to become an airline pilot, with just being having flight in mind, what would be the best piece of advice that you could give somebody right now wanting to pursue that career path?
Yeah, so I'd say don't try to sit around and overplan. Time is critical. Mm-hmm. So start now, because you know, and earlier I said a lot of people ask me, hey, my son wants to be an airline pilot, what do I do? Well, there's a million ways to get there, but the first step is always the same. The next step is always the same. Go get your medical, because everybody has to go get a medical from a medical you know, an FAA, they call them their flight docs. They're just usually older doctors who went and got a license from the FAA to write these. I can't think of the name of them right now. Not dedicated medical examiner, but either way, you go to get your medical, make sure you're good on your medical, and then start flying. Find a flight school and start flying. And that's the first step of getting started. Now, your next steps after that, how am I going to pay for it? That might be different, but don't waste too much time trying to overplan it, because getting your private license is, that's your first step for everybody, no matter who you are. Unless you're like, hey, I don't want to take out any debt whatsoever. So then you're going to have to join the military and become a pilot in the military. I've talked about this a few times in the past couple months. We talked with other people who went to the airlines. I had a Coast Guard, I mean, a bunch of military guys in my class. And what would we tell our kids if they want to be a pilot? And the best way, the most efficient way to do it, and I'm kind of, this is just my opinion, but I would commission as a guard or reserve officer in the Air Force. And then they send you to flight school, you get all your Air Force ratings, and yeah, you owe the Air Force Reserve or Guard for 10 years or whatever, but that's just 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year, right? And now you have all those ratings I talked about, and you just need to build a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. And another aspect of that is that you have to become an airline pilot and get your ATP or Air Transport Pilot license, you have to have 1,500 hours. And there's some variations of that that gets stepped down, that they make exceptions for. It's the military is the lowest one at 750. So if you went through a military flight school and you graduated as a military pilot from a military flight school, now they say, you can get your ATP or Air Transport Pilot license with only 750 hours. And so what that does is it cuts 750 hours off the time you got to go mess with. And the certificates that you got to get are all the same. But if you, like I started this by saying, I would do Air Force, it's just my opinion, Air Force Guard or Air Force Reserve, and then let them get you your certs, commercial ratings and multi-engine stuff all the way through. And then you just build the time, and you could be, I mean, you go through Air Force flight school in 2 years or 2.5 years or whatever. And then, you spend another 6 months or a year finishing the time. And now you're in the airlines, right? In 2.5 years, and it cost you nothing. I mean, other than, you know, but you're going to have to do ROTC. Can't go reserve out of the academies, right? But you'd have to do ROTC or something and then get a reserve or a guard commission.
And this is the last question I'm going to ask you, and it's not for the viewers, it's for myself. Can you teach me to fly? And if so, how long will it take you to do so?
I think you flew last time we flew.
We did. So when now can I set a schedule with you? I know your schedule's busy. And myself, realistically, could we get it done in the year of 2024 if I wanted to become a private pilot and get my private pilot license with a single engine?
Oh, yeah, 2024 for sure. I mean, do some quick math. 40 hours is your minimum for that private pilot. If you went up and flew an hour, 1.2 every time, you know, you're looking at like 30 flights. If you just did it once a weekend, even one flight a weekend. You're only talking about 30 weeks. That's pretty slow. I don't recommend that. I recommend at least two flights a week, because otherwise you're kind of spending a half hour every time you get back in the plane to relearn some things that you learned the week prior. But yeah, I think that's another bit of advice, is just never leave yourself too many breaks. It goes back to the time thing. So take advantage of time and make sure that you're being as efficient as you can, because that matters, because you're learning something brand new. You've never, ever, most people have never done anything like that. So everything you learn every day is going to be the first time you did it. And we all know that you only get better at something when you do it more often and more frequently. But if you're only flying once a week, and God forbid, if you end up finding yourself so short on money that you're like doing it once a month, I do recommend in that case you kind of take a break, so that way you can do it like, do more flights more frequently. But yeah, you and I, we can go, we can do it anytime. My schedule's kind of chaotic, but but all you got to do is find 2 hours of the day and be like, all right, let's roll. We'll roll up to the flight line. So,
well, you guys heard it yourself. I appreciate you tuning in, Kyle. I appreciate you being here, but you guys heard it yourself. Coming from a certified flight instructor, we're getting my private pilot license on a single engine in 2024. I don't know how, I don't know when, but we're going to make it happen at some point. Guys, I appreciate you tuning in. Until next time.
Thanks, man.